Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we talk about the Consumer Electronics Show 2025. It's not just graphics cards, it's AI and so much more. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McKay. You know, as an overclocker and hardware reviewer, there are a lot of systems that I will go and put together for like sometimes a couple of hours and then tear them back down.
Right.
But there's one system that I just do not touch, and that's my main workstation.
Well, yeah, you got to have a dependable PC to work on, that's for sure.
And some people like a laptop. I like a desktop PC. I got dual monitors. Oh my God, so old school. But my main machine is literally an X99.
Ooh, that's a little bit long in the tooth.
Yeah, it's been around for a while. It's been very reliable, but it's only got 16 gigs of memory, and it's kind of showing its age. So, it's
kind of like driving a classic car, right? Or maybe your favorite comfortable pair of slippers. Is that where we're going?
Well, possibly. But the point is, I decided I was going to treat myself to a new build.
Oh, yay.
So I wanted a 4090.
Well, of course.
You know, you would think that I would be able to, I would be flush with 4090s, you know, operating a review site, but graphics cards have been difficult to get, partially because they sell themselves.
Don't need much in the review cycles for that. So I'm in a few big sites and a little hype and you're good. I get it, but
basically
I'm still sad.
Yeah. Well, and the 4090 has been very, very popular in the news and also with gamers. And also with AI enthusiasts in China and so on and so forth. So the price fluctuates a lot.
Yes.
And when I bought my system, this was back in December. So last month as of this recording.
Ooh, I see.
I know. And they were listed for, I don't know, $3,500 for a 4090. But I went out to Newegg and I was able to get a bundle deal. So I got a motherboard, a 4090, a case, a cooler, and a power supply.
Sure.
I'm like, hey, this is pretty cool. I can use some of it maybe for review fodder, but that way I could get my 4090 at cost.
And get some goodies. But there might be a reason for that, Dennis.
I think so. And we went to CES.
Yes, yeah, that time of year, January CES season.
And the keynote speaker was Jensen Huang from NVIDIA.
Excellent.
Which is really a very first for Jensen. Jensen's always presented. I mean, the couple of times that you went to CES with me, we went to go see him speak.
Yeah.
And it was always off the beaten path, something where we had to go and make a trek and make a special invite to get in. And overall, it was just kind of a hassle, but it was good to listen to what he had to say.
Well, they've been driving the market in a lot of ways for a while now. So it's kind of like getting the golden ticket from Walker, right? You get to go listen to NVIDIA, see the stuff before everybody else, see if those leaks are true. Because
well, you will hear all of those things at those presentations. When I went to Computex last year, they called it the keynote speech from Jensen, but it wasn't associated with Computex at all. It wasn't even close to where Computex was being held. But it was a two-hour speech from Jensen talking about robots and AI and Blackwell and the next generation of what's coming next. Now, of course, at CES, this was the keynote address. And this is really the biggest, hottest speech that kicks off the event. And for the first time ever, Jensen was the actual keynote speaker for CES.
Officially.
Which was pretty awesome. And it made a lot of people happy. There was a huge line to get in to go sit down. I didn't go because I didn't want to dedicate 4 hours of my day just to make sure that I could sit close enough to be able to take pictures.
Well, that makes sense.
But there was a live stream from just about everybody at the keynote address, including from CES. And I believe you got some reactions from that.
You know, it's so funny because I didn't listen to it live, mostly because I lost track of it.
You forgot.
And because I usually do. The keynote to me is one of my favorite things from when I go because it tends to be something really cool and exciting and some fun reveals. And and this was kind of in a similar vein.
Well, and the keynote is supposed to set the stage for CES.
Well, I think it really did this year in a sense, but I mean, I could sum it up and say that it was really just, yes, we have new graphic cards, which we kind of already knew. And then AI, like a bad nursery rhyme, like, you know, oh, yeah. AI, AIO.
Yeah, well, it was like AI PCs and AI robots and yeah.
So, of course, we know AI is the future, but I could not escape, Dennis, from really anybody that even knew that I was remotely associated with computers. The takeaway from the keynote was very clear. If you bought a 4090, you're screwed.
Yeah.
And you should buy a 5070 like immediately. Immediately.
And exactly what I just did. So I bought the 4090, and then of course at the keynote they're saying the RTX 5070, same performance as the 4090, $600.
$600, which is phenomenal. And this reminds me of some of these earth-shaking releases we've had in the past. I mean, even just the first RTX cards was kind of like this, right? They just came in, they bombed the previous generation, they maxed out the performance, and suddenly you're just like, how did they do it at that price? Mm-hmm. But, oh my gosh, the domination of the 5070 numbers, if they're real, over the 4090 is scary at that price point. Like, yeah. I'm not going to lie, here at Hardware Asylum, we recommend that you skip a generation if you have a video card religiously. Mm-hmm. We're always right about that.
Always.
And this is not the first time we said, oh my gosh, maybe we're wrong. Doesn't matter what you have. You need a 50X processor, which I think we did with the 40Xs, but you know, calmer minds would tell you to skip a generation.
I would say there's a lot to that. And I would also say there's like a little bit of smoke and mirrors.
So oh, do say.
Let's go to the NVIDIA demo. So excellent. I got invited to the NVIDIA suites. Ooh. Where they were doing media demos.
And a short list.
And this is one of those situations where there's basically two demo rooms and they just have different stations that you go around and people will explain what's happening at each one of the stations. On the one side, they were talking about all of the AI embedded apps. So, you know, we had the NVIDIA streaming, which is that one game service that really only works in metropolitan areas where you have fiber internet. Of course, that's not something that I'm terribly interested in. I like playing my local games on my local PC with this 4090 that I just purchased.
What a bargain.
But the one thing on that side that I really liked was that they were using AI to do content creation. So on one side of it, they had a lighting enhancement. So you would have basically pointed light from one side and the AI would enhance it so that it would take a picture of your face, regenerate it with the proper lighting so that you didn't have to have all these expensive lights.
Oh, that's nice.
And they also had an option where it would record your voice and overlay it so that it would make it sound like you were talking into a $3,000 microphone.
Ooh.
Much like our Rode Procasters that we're talking on right now, instead of the webcam microphone that is in front of your monitor or the one that's attached to your headset.
I can certainly see the appeal of that, particularly if it trickles down into cameras.
Well, of course. And the other one that really impressed me was they had an AI that would take, say, a press release, and it would extract all the text, and then it would create two voices to create a podcast.
Oh, wow. So we are becoming obsolete? Is that what's...
Yeah, pretty much. So in a sense, what it would do is it would take all the text, extract it, and then it would do two sets of summaries. So we'd have one summary and one voice that would have one persona, and it would take another summary as another voice and another persona, so it might be a female versus a male, and then it would record those summaries and make a discussion. So you could just say how long you wanted the podcast to be.
Nice.
And it would record that audio. Now, once it was done, you could ask questions of it. So just like when you are doing a rag on like a local LLM or even with ChatGPT, you can ask questions and it will go and query, in this case, the podcast and the text, and then give you the answers and then even pull up the portion of that show where that was discussed.
Wow.
And I was like, this is the epitome of massive content generation. So I could sit down and just write our show and then have the Dennis persona and the Darren persona go and record it.
There you go. This could be AI right now.
It could be. Not likely, though, because of the flubs and the blood and whatever.
Cannot teach your AI to drink whiskey.
So on the gaming side of things, they had basically a comparison between DLSS 3 versus DLSS 4. And this is where we have a 4090 running with DLSS 3.
Somebody has one of those.
With a 5070 running DLSS 4.
Which I'll remind you guys is kind of the entry level of the next generation at the moment. It is the cheapest card they've announced.
Now, they just had a static rendering. I think this was out of Apex. 172 frames per second with the 4090, DLSS 3.
Nice.
Very respective. 224 on the 5070 running DLSS 4.
I'm starting to see why everybody is so excited about the 5070.
Okay, so this next demo is the RTX 5090.
Okay, so the new, well, the new top dog in parentheses.
Yep, and that's that $2,000 card that they announced during the keynote address.
Although I should point out that the early press was saying maybe as much as $3,600, so maybe it is a bargain.
Well, it's the gouging price. I mean, yes. we have the price of like $2,000. And we talked about this in previous shows where the price for the flagship is really representative of what the previous generation flagship normally sold for.
Yes, because that's what the market will bear.
Yeah, exactly. And that happened with the 2080s and also the 3090s. The 4090, if you get the OC edition, it was around $2,000. Well,
yeah.
Now the 5090 is $2,000. Of course, we'll have gouging prices, whatever. Now, this demonstration of the RTX 5090 was raw throughput versus DLSS 4.
And so that's the 5090 versus which one again?
The 5090.
The 5090, yeah, but what are they comparing it against?
The 5090.
So it's raw versus DLSS 4. Oh, okay, I'm following.
29 frames per second.
That's raw?
With raw.
Jeez.
The exact same frame with the exact same settings with DLSS 4 enabled, 251 frames per second.
Wow. That's awesome.
It is pretty cool. Now, this is also when we have AI taking over. And as you know, with DLSS, it's taking a much lower resolution picture of the game that you're playing and then uses some AI trickery to enhance it and upscale it. That is how you're able to get the throughput through the card and why we can have 251 frames per second instead of 29.
Okay, so that makes sense, right? Because you're starting with a lot less data and then using the AI to fill in the blanks, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one thing that I didn't realize, and somebody really had to point this out to me, is that during that enhancement, they are actually really enhancing it. So they were pointing out that the texture on a table was more real. It actually had gaps in the wood, which was pretty cool. And then there was a ceiling fan that was spinning. On the unenhanced version, it was clipping. It was just kind of pop, 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 pop. And some of that might have been the 29 frames per second.
Sure.
But on the DLSS, it was smooth video. There was absolutely no hitching. There was no ghosting.
Wow.
And you could even see the ceiling fan wobble a little bit. And that's something that you wouldn't normally see in the game unless you were really paying attention. Because really, who cares about a ceiling fan, right? But those are the things that kind of give you immersion into the game. And this is something...
I was going to say, because your brain notices those things, even if it's just subconsciously, if they're not accurate. Mm-hmm. And it takes you out of the experience.
Exactly. Now, of course, just about everybody had RTX cards on display, and we can get to those in a moment. But I really wanted to talk about the title sponsor for CES.
That's right.
Yin Gaming, or Yin Gaming.
So we've done quite a few reviews of their peripherals over the years, but their bread and butter is really a lot broader with full systems and peripherals.
Yeah, it's like pre-built gaming, custom gaming. You can go to their website and spec out a build, which is pretty great. And then you can get everything branded Yin. So you can get webcams, you can get mice, keyboards, monitors, cases. They are really proud of the fact that they design their own computer cases, which is, you know, they're very, very unique. We did a review of the Mirage X. A really big case, quite heavy, because it's got some really thick acrylic sheets in the front.
Yeah, it did.
But it does a really great job of RGBifying the front of your case while not inhibiting airflow.
Which all sounds very not technical. Believe me, it's a good thing.
I got invited to go visit their suite, and they had several cases on display, and some of them I wrote down names for, and some of them I have lost them.
Now, this first one's really pretty. It reminds me of one of the cases we talked about in my best of 2024.
Yeah, we have the fish tank style all glass front chassis, but we also have a digital display off into the side here that talks about the internal temperature, fan speed, system temperature. It basically will give you a monitor of what's going on inside the computer.
That's a good looking case. I like the way they did the lighting too. It's nice when you get a case manufacturer that doesn't go overboard on the RGB, and it makes a nice accent.
Can you actually go overboard on RGB? Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It depends on who you ask.
Definitely. We also had the flagship item that I really liked, which was a stand desk. Now, I'll link the article that I wrote down in the show notes below, but basically we have this stand desk. It's motorized, so it'll go up and down. We got RGB strips on the right and left. In the center, though, it's a piece of tempered glass, and underneath that is a full system.
I'm looking at the picture, and I'm seeing a pretty nice RGB build in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a while, I think, since we've seen this trend with cases that are built inside of desks.
Yeah, the desk computer.
The desktop PC. And
yeah, I think the last popular one was the Harbinger desk, and that was done by a case modder who would custom build these desks, but it was pretty much like two systems, and they were fully water-cooled and everything. This one from Wine, it has lots of fans and an AIO, but basically instead of building a chassis desktop computer, we have one in the desk.
So now you can order this as a full system that's pre-built, or mm-hmm. you can just order the desk, is that right?
I believe you can do both. They talked about how this was going to be available originally as a, you buy it and we'll put the system in for you.
Which makes sense, as they're a bit of a boutique builder. Mm-hmm. So I definitely look at this. If this is your thing, particularly if you're strapped for space, it looks pretty sexy.
Mm-hmm. And then on top of the desk, we have the other highlight that I liked, which was a 40-inch curved IPS monitor. Gaming monitor, 120 hertz, I believe. 4K.
Nice.
And curved, and IPS. Normally, a curved monitor is one of those OLEDs, and they were really proud of the fact that they could get a curved panel that was IPS. So you get that good wide viewing angle, and you don't have the danger of burn-in.
Well, I like that, and I'm particularly fond of the fact that traditionally, their price point is very competitive.
You have the 39s LG?
I have 39s from LG, and I have a double stack, and I adore them, but it doesn't have a lot of curve to it.
Right. It's pretty flat, if I remember correctly. And this one is what they call the perfect size for a single monitor gaming, because that way you get a nice wide peripheral. And if you are close enough, then it will give you that immersion factor. And it doesn't take up a lot of space.
Well, I'd certainly be interested in taking a deeper look at that as they become more widely available.
The last item, and I did an article on this as well, is their new gaming chair.
Now, that's an interesting looking chair for sure, because it doesn't have traditional support like I would expect, but I see...
Yeah, it's not the traditional racing chair.
Yeah, and maybe that's what I'm seeing, is it doesn't look like the traditional office chairs like you'd get from Serta or any of those sort of office chair companies. And it doesn't look like a gaming chair. Mm-hmm. It sort of looks like something you'd see at like a chiropractor's office, maybe.
Well, it was designed to be an ergonomic chair. We have armrests with, I think it was like 4 points of articulation. We have a mesh seat panel, so nice and soft on your tushy, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And these panels in the back are strategically placed to give you lumbar support, neck support, and back support to make the chair relatively comfortable.
Clever.
Now, the one thing that I will mention is that when I sat down in this chair, it was really wobbly for me.
Okay.
And they mentioned it's because I was not the target body type.
Oh, say how so?
Well, if you start looking at the specs and read between the lines, this is designed for your much larger gamer.
Oh, so the American gamer.
The American gamer. And this is the one thing that I really liked about this is the fact that if you have the traditional racing gaming chair, it's a racing seat.
Right.
And unless you are of a slender body type, you don't fit in those chairs very well.
Yeah, and they're designed with very specific support dimensions. So, I mean, it's like a cup, right? If you don't fit in it, it's going to be uncomfortable. And even if you do fit in it, they're not necessarily designed for long periods of hardcore work or gaming.
Yeah. Well, and this is an actual chaired example that doesn't require you to go down to Office Depot and pick, you know, the softest, biggest chair you can.
I like it. And I'm getting the impression that every one of those pads is probably adjustable.
Mm-hmm. It is. They're kind of like on one of those little wobble springs sort of things, and which is why it was wobbly for me. They said that, you know, if you fit in the chair, it actually cradles your body much better because you're not going to wiggle around as much.
Nice.
And then, of course, we had some other items on display. So we had some new chassis, a smaller version of the Mirage X, and various other peripherals, including a ergonomic style keyboard, which is...
I like that. And it looks like it's wireless too. And we've talked before about how difficult it is to find a wireless ergo keyboard. So it's nice to see that that's coming out finally.
Yeah. And of course, an ultralight mouse. Everybody had ultralight mice. I'm not really a fan, but now that they're wireless, you're not going to have a cable going pulling your mouse off the desk, which
is
pretty
great. Well, that's a good point too. I feel like I'm a bit old fashioned in that I prefer the opportunity to adjust the weight, which seems to be kind of a thing of the past.
Yeah, it's really sad. So I'll have names for all of these products down in the show notes below. Unfortunately, none of these are on the YN website just quite yet. They're brand new for CES, so be sure to check out their site for when these are available. Now, unlike in previous years, we're not going to go booth by booth for my CES coverage. We'll just kind of pick some of the highlights and talk about those.
How's I that? Like it. Why don't we go a little differently then, since we're not going day by day, and go largely alphabetical. That'll be kind of fun and make it easy to index.
Cool. So Asus is first.
Okay. Well, of course, Asus has long been a leader in motherboards, video cards. Well, anymore, they make just about everything.
Yeah, including batteries that look like Thor's hammer. We talked about that in a previous episode. If you know which one it is, send us an email with that episode number. All right, so the highlight at Asus, obviously they had the RTX cards on display, and they have a brand new product line for the RTX cards because they are superseding Strix. So Strix is going to be the mainstream gaming, where Strix used to be like the super high-end, and then Matrix was even higher than that.
Wow. Okay, so where are we going now?
We are going to the astral plane, or astral in this case. I think it's kind of stupid for companies to go in and create a brand new product line just because they have a special product that they want to highlight. I mean, there's a reason Strix is such a great brand name. It's because everybody knows that that's the high end. That's what you get. But in this case, they have astral, which is going to encompass the 5090 and the 5080.
Okay, so maybe the plan is to retire the lower end names?
No, we still have Strix, but it's going to be a 5070 and below.
Interesting. All right, so it's like now if you have Strix, you're just not good enough.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Which really also makes me feel bad because my 4090 is a Strix.
Oh, I should have waited.
It's terrible.
Those guys. Okay.
But the card looks amazing. It's still triple or quadruple slot, something like that. It's got four fans because the GPU is much shorter. So we got...
I do love the more traditional exposed fans over the... Is it the Founders Edition that everybody's been showing?
Yep.
Yeah, maybe I'm old-fashioned there too, but I like to see my fans.
I like to see them as well, and that way you know they're working. So in this particular case, you have three fans in the front and a reverse fan on the back that will go and help push-pull your air through the radiator. So
very nice.
Now, the one thing that I will like to point out, and this will be typical for every RTX 50 series card, on the back, they've exposed the area where the GPU is. And if you have a much larger square like that, that's going to be the 5090. The 5070 is half that. So NVIDIA, instead of just fusing off cores, they're physically chopping the cores.
Well, I don't know that I love the exposed. It looks great, but I'm a little nervous that that would be delicate. So I guess time will tell.
Oh, come on. All of our video cards used to be completely exposed before.
All right, you got me there.
This is before backplates and everything, so... We have the same 12-volt high-power connections on here. We also have some fan connections, so you can control system fans based off of the GPU speed.
Interesting. Okay.
And then a BIOS switch, which is very popular for gamers and stuff. But here is that 5080, much, much smaller. See how that is?
Yeah, I see that. It looks almost like you're doing portrait landscape at a glance, but it's definitely smaller. And that's a good looking card. But that's the Strix too.
Yeah, that's the Strix. That's the down market one.
Yeah, all right. That's for the peasants now, the Strix.
Yeah, it's terrible peasants. And then of course we have Tough Gaming. Tough Gaming is still around. And this is the thing that it irks me. Tough Gaming, the Tough Gaming Alliance was something that Asus launched. Big brand trying to grab everybody together so that they could create Tough Gaming Alliance products that all go with their line of whatever. Nobody does that anymore, except Asus still sells the Tough Gaming stuff.
Yeah, but in a way, Tough has kind of become their affordable gaming line, and I feel like they're, at the risk of being sort of stereotypical, more of a tank, right? Because it's not going to have that cutting-edge stuff, but everything on it is going to be dependable.
And it's typically down market,
though. Down market, yeah. So it's going to last forever.
So the highlight of the ROG visit at Asus was the Apex.
Ooh.
Now, when I say Apex, we're making the assumption that this is an Intel-based motherboard. It's designed for overclocking because it's got two DIMM configuration and some enhancements to aid in the performance aspects of your system.
Well, of course, because Apex has always been the pinnacle of the ROG boards.
Exactly. Well, they're bringing the Apex to the AM5 platform.
Wow.
So we have an X870 Apex.
Well, it's definitely a good-looking board.
Yeah, I don't know. This is one of those boards where it's like, I'm surprised that it took them this long to come up with it. But since we have kind of a falling out on the Intel side of things with performance and overclocking and a resurgence on the AMD side, I think we're going to see a big switch between companies moving from one camp to the other.
I think that's true even in the enthusiast space, because really it's been since Intel launched the Core 2 Duo that they've really kind of been the dominant overclocking platform. And now we're seeing, especially in the gaming space, that AMD processors are back on top.
Well, yeah, and it's not necessarily just raw performance, because, I mean, obviously you can still overclock them extremely well if you can keep them cool, but also the architecture is something that I've noticed. We have a lot more PCI Express lanes that we can divvy out for M.2 drives, multiple graphics cards, better handling of PCI Express 5. And it's something that I really kind of glossed over early on when I was like, oh, Intel's the best. But at the time, they still were. Well, we're floundering a little bit on the Intel side.
Yeah, even I'm considering an AMD build.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be awesome. Well, maybe we can get you one of these Apex boards, because much like on the Intel side of things, we got two slots for graphics cards. We have a DIMM2 slot here for M.2 drives. We have two DIMMs for memory, so that's how you can get the highest memory speeds and highest overclocking out of your memory.
Nice.
Enhanced VRM. Basically, everything that made the Apex great is now on the AMD side.
Oh, it sure is an attractive board, too. So I can see this being super popular going forward, especially with those X3D processors.
If we go down the line, we're going to pull up Cooler Master next.
Oh, nice.
Now, Cooler Master is, I like seeing Cooler Master. And much like with Asus, they're experimenting.
Okay.
So they're bringing back the V-Series coolers.
Now, you were a huge fan of those, the V6 and the V8, right?
Yeah, we also reviewed a V10. The V10 was the one that had a Peltier.
Oh, that's right.
To go along with it.
Maybe the last Peltier cooler that we saw here in the labs.
Oh, no, I have one that's an AIO.
Oh.
Peltier on an AIO. That was an interesting cooler, to say the least. But basically, they're bringing back the V-Series. So we have V4, V6, and that goes for how many heat pipes are coming off of the cold plate. This new design also has additional heat pipes coming out of the center. They're much, much smaller, but they're kind of designed as a vapor chamber sort of enhancement.
Okay.
But we have the V Light series, which they are hoping will replace the Hyper 212.
Nothing can replace the Hyper 212. It's like the L88 engine of the computer world.
I know. And that's like, it's 20 years in the making, and it's been a dominant cooler for over 20 years. It's like, why kill it? But, you know, they want to experiment. They want to, I don't know, tarnish their reputation or something.
They can't be on top forever.
The one thing about the V coolers is that when you get into the V8 and the V10, they add some decoration to the top to give it kind of this Audi engine feel.
I like the look of that. The V10 looks like an engine with the engine cover.
Now, obviously, they have a bunch of new cases, which we can talk about. But the other highlight here was we have a new fan called the XT Pro.
Okay.
The MF120 XT Pro is the full name. Basically, we have a full metal frame. We have variable speeds. They're going to have a speed controller in it, so you can have it in a silent mode or in a high performance mode.
Nice.
Which is something that I really liked about some of their early fans. And this is going to be the 30 millimeter thick edition. So a lot of these custom fans are going to be thicker than what we have been accustomed to. It gives you more performance, more airflow, and will generally be quieter.
Well, that makes sense. Cases have more space now than they used to, especially as we've moved into these corner office units and the cubes. So why not take advantage of that with a little bit thicker, higher performing fan?
Yeah. Now, the master frame was the case I was talking about. This is going to be a modular case design taken to the extreme. So you'll be able to swap out panels if you wanted to have a frosted glass side panel or a mesh side panel or one that looks like stone, which is kind of cool.
Nice.
Now, the one thing that I really wanted to highlight is that Cooler Master is going to start building their own systems. Now, this is something they've been doing before. So you had like the Shark case and the case with the made out of the sneaker, which I thought was weird. But these were system builds and they were designed as high-end art pieces in a sense.
Yeah.
But they're going to start offering just basic builds, but with a Cooler Master flair.
So you'll be able to buy just right off the shelf like any other boutique builder.
Mm-hmm, pretty much. But if you happen to get one of their builds and it has an RTX card in it, you're going to get a custom cooler for it.
Oh, now that's pretty sexy there. We're looking at the 5090 with some of those new fans. It looks great.
Yeah, I mean, this is all Cooler Master design. So we have Cooler Master fans. We have revised heatsink. It's basically the same size as what you would get from Gigabyte or Asus or something like that. They won't be selling these to the public, but if you happen to buy one of their machines, that's how you can get the cooler.
Well, maybe not selling them to the public yet, but if there's a demand, I like that because it's kind of in that same zone as when you see an OC edition. Mm-hmm. But in this case, you're getting extreme cooling built in.
Now, I kind of like these because we have chrome accents around the outside and heat sinks instead of just a backplate.
Yeah, I do like the look of that. It looks very functional and nice. Yeah. Exposed fans.
The last item before we move on at Cooler Master was the AquaGate Max Retro. This is an external cooling unit, but the thing that made me chuckle was that the AquaGate name and the fact that it says Retro.
AquaGate Max Retro Mini.
Yeah.
Max now, Mini.
If I go and look through some of the reviews that I did at Ninja Lane that didn't get ported over to Hardware Asylum, you will see AquaGate. So some of the very first commercially available water coolers were from Cooler Master, and they were branded AquaGate, which made me chuckle when they brought this back saying the Max Retro.
I do think it's a little funny that it's the Max Retro Mini CDU. The logo, maximum cooling, minimal footprint. It just works.
It just works. It's pretty awesome. And they kept bringing up a video that Linus did about how he was using his pool to cool his computer or something. And like, yeah.
Try vodka, Linus.
Okay, if we move on, Creality. We can do Creality really quick.
Woohoo!
They were on the show floor, and they had some amazing 3D printers on display, including some that allowed you to switch between four different filaments in the same machine for the same print job.
Ooh, and I'm excited that we're including 3D printing in our review this year, because I have a Creality 3D printer at home, and I love it.
So do I. I have a V3, which is the slightly upgraded of the same version that you got.
Excellent. But they are, of course, advancing in leaps and bounds. So it kind of makes sense.
Well, and I was watching this work, and they were printing some dice that had white spots in there. So it was printing black, and then it would stop, roll back the black filament, and then roll forward the white filament. And then it did a quick purge to make sure that it would finally was getting the white filament, and then it would start printing that.
Wow.
And off to the side, there was this old tray that collected all of the purge lines and stuff. It was really slick how it was able to make the switch.
Excellent. Yeah, multi-filament printers have been kind of where everybody's been experimenting. It's nice to see something that can manage it real time.
Mm-hmm. We have one that also supported 8 different colors.
Wow.
Which is pretty awesome. And I also have a video, which I'm not going to be able to show on the podcast here, but
of course.
It was a 400 by 400 millimeter print bed. Instead of the trunnion moving up that had the print head on it, the build plate moved down and it was able to print extremely fast. They were saying that if you had your CR10, it might take 45 hours to do a print.
Yeah.
You could do it in an hour on this one.
Ooh, I'm already sold then. That is a huge time savings.
Yeah. Well, the printer is big. It was moving fast. It was actually shaking the entire table that it was sitting on as it was printing. It was just a beast of a 3D printer.
Well, I imagine those, like everything, will start out initially very expensive, but as adoption comes, it'll get cheaper and cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so quickly, we're going to go to Creative.
Now, Creative Labs is perennially a favorite of both Dennis and I because not only do they have great technology, but they offer some of the most interesting demos.
Yes, and this year they had a 3D positional demo using a new technology based off of Super XFi and a new set of speakers.
Very nice.
Which was pretty awesome. So that way you just basically had a single speaker in front of you and you were able to get positional sound from that using Super XFi.
That is amazing. I remember back when we wondered what they were going to do when they got rid of THX, but yet they continue to impress.
Yep. So on display, they had a new version of the Pebble.
Now, I just reviewed a pair of these. In fact, I did the X Pluses, and they were fantastic and a bargain, I might add, for the price.
Yeah, these have been selling like hotcakes, so to speak, on Amazon.
But there's a good reason for that, right? Because the Pebbles are being upgraded.
Yes, we have the Pebble Nova. Now, this is the same form factor as the regular Pebble, but we have a woofer that's directly behind the speaker that would normally be facing you. So that way you have integrated sub bass, so to speak, instead of having a separate little module connected.
I like the look of these too, because they've gotten rid of the traditional RGB accents that kind of look like everything else on the market. And they've upgraded these to almost an art deco look to me that looks like very futuristic.
Yeah, and that was a theme that I noticed with a lot of vendors, and that, even some that we're not even going to talk about, where they were designing computer products that weren't supposed to look like computer products.
Nice.
They want them to look different. So either it's like an appliance or something, just as long as it doesn't look like a computer.
Well, if you think about it, it makes sense, right? Because we've kind of standardized the way a lot of products look and act in the market. And there hasn't been a lot of innovation over the last couple of years. And, you know, Moore's Law or whatever you want to blame it on, right? We've kind of reached that point where we're taking what's good and we're just making it better, but it's in incremental steps. So in order to differentiate in the market, you got to come up with something that looks better, different, that stands out visually.
Yes. Now, one thing that will probably stand out in your ear holes will be the Sound Blaster G8. Now, this is a new version audio interface. And according to the specs, this thing is going to be the best thing ever since sliced bread and then baking it yourself.
Wow. Now I have a similar version of this that I use pretty frequently, especially at LAN parties, the X4. Mm-hmm. It looks very similar. So it's a big jump, I would think, from an X4 to a G8, because the G series has been traditionally saved for the full size external units.
Right. And this one's really small, which it's got a big dial on the front of it, which is kind of interesting. But according to the specs, this thing is going to rival a lot of built-in sound cards with op amps and stuff like that.
Nice.
So it remains to be seen. I didn't get to listen to these at the Creative booth, but we will hopefully get one in for review. We'll let you know how good it is.
Well, I'm looking forward to that because it does look like a good integrated amp DAC. And if it uses the new Super XFi, it's going to sound fantastic.
Okay, moving right along, we are going to go directly to Gigabyte.
Excellent. Now, we love Gigabyte, another builder that's given us a lot of support over the years with a wide range of products.
Now, at the Gigabyte booth, they did not have a whole lot on display. Obviously, they did have the new RTX line, which we can talk about.
Right.
But I was really intrigued by the motherboards in the AI top line.
Oh, now AI top. That's interesting. But I'm looking at this thing, and of course, you'll have to look at the pictures, and it really has kind of a unique look. I feel like I'm seeing a set of fans on both sides of the processor.
Yes, that is the cool of the VRM. Now, what we're looking at here is the Gigabyte W790 AI Top. Now, the AI Top line of motherboards is designed for AI work, AI development.
Makes sense.
When I first saw these at Computex, I was thinking, oh, well, these are just workstation boards that they added the AI Top logo to. Now that I know a little bit more about how AI processing is done on the desktop and some of the requirements for that, these designs make a lot more sense. So we have 8 slots for memory. So we have a massive amount of memory support for the processor.
Right.
And we have multiple slots for graphic cards.
So we're looking at essentially a fairly specialized build with a focus on AI, but it could also be used for your other typical computing needs.
Yeah. So like some high-end desktop stuff, some workstation stuff. It's not necessarily designed for gaming. It's a bit overkill for that. But as you know, we can game on anything.
When has that stopped us, right?
Yep. So we have the Intel version with the Intel workstation and server chip. We also have the TRX 50 AI Top, which is the Threadripper edition. And as you notice, this has the same memory layout. It has the same slot layout. It also has the same fans over top of the VRMs.
Well, I noticed that one only supports 2 video cards, though. So is that because it's a little bit down market or just the design?
That is because the card is in the way.
Oh, so it's just the picture.
Yeah, so this other picture here, we have 4-way support. So we have 4 graphics card slots. It's just that the card was in the way, so it looked like there was only 2.
Okay.
Now, if we move down the line to the Z890 RS Extreme AI Top, you'll notice that this one only has a single PCI Express slot. And that is because of the way that the Intel architecture is set up. And when SLI went away, so did the switches that would allow you to do PCI Express expansions. And for this to be an AI top motherboard, we only have a single slot for a graphics card to leave room for extra M.2 slots.
Well, I have to admit, the look of this thing is kind of Spartan for me. Is that a screen, though, that I'm seeing top left?
Yeah, so the RS Extreme allows you to have LCD screens.
Nice.
Where that's part of that product line. So yeah, we have an LCD screen on the left. We also have an integrated fan for the memory to keep the memory cool.
Oh, now that's nice. And that's kind of new. Takes me back to the old Dominators.
Oh, yeah. Except that this one is from Aras.
Lots of AI is what the theme is this year.
Yeah, they were really pushing those boards. And it's an interesting market because not everybody understands how AI is set up and what you need to have in terms of hardware requirements to satisfy those needs. It reminds me of how we used to build computers back in the day, and they'd say, hey, so what should I buy? And it's like, the classical answer was like, well, it depends on what you want to do.
Exactly.
And those answers would really mean the difference between a system that might cost you at the time like $800 versus something that might cost you $3,000 or $4,000. And it was all because of the expansion cards you needed to do certain tasks, or at least do them efficiently. We have the RTX cards on display. We basically have all of the standard names are here. So the gaming OCs, we have the WinForce. This is a small form factor version.
Nice.
Which is 16 gigabytes, which is pretty awesome. We have also a water block for the RTX 5090.
Oh, yeah. Now, I've run a few of these in the past. I feel like it's a terrific card for the money. If you know you're going to do overclocking, get everything in one single unit, save a little money. You know it's going to work well together. And you're right. That is a great-looking water block. It looks like a similar design to an EK.
Yeah. I would be surprised if it's not an EK design, just because EK loves to work with board manufacturers to build water blocks for, you know, VRMs and graphics cards and stuff like that.
Can't go wrong with that. That's a great looking unit. Now, yep. Ooh, now you're showing me a really pretty board.
Yeah, so we have the RS Pro Ice. Now, when RS started releasing white motherboards, they also had a price premium attached to them. So if you wanted to have a white board, it was like an extra $30 or $40 or something like that. And they justified that because it was a special color and they really didn't think it would sell very well. But
yeah,
white products are going gangbusters.
Well, especially with RGB, they look terrific. I know we've seen some with gold accents in the Asian markets. We're all kind of just tired of it. Like we used to be tired of the beige boxes, right?
Nope. Now we need to have everything white.
Everything white.
Now, of course, the biggest challenge is making sure that all of the white is the same tone.
Oh, yeah.
And that's still a challenge. But Gigabyte has taken away the price premium and is now expanding the item pool or the product pool that will be offered in ice,
which would be the white stuff. Something clean about a good all-white build.
Yep. Now, the final thing I wanted to bring up is that Aris is also bringing back the Mini ITX.
Oh, good.
Now, for most vendors, they did not have any Mini ITX boards on display. Aris was the only one. And I'd asked them about that. And it says, well, we are seeing that there is a lack of Mini ITX boards on the market. And there has been. And part of that is because of the power requirements that system integrators have to adhere to when they're building systems for certain regions. And they just can't do that with a Mini ITX and be able to put a fat graphics card in there. But for people like us that are building on our own, the Mini ITX really is the sweet spot of getting the right size computer that is the right size.
You know, things should be, and we've talked about this quite a bit over the years, things should be trending smaller, right? We shouldn't need a box the size of a house to have an enthusiast PC.
Well, yeah, and back in the day, there was a reason to have a full-size motherboard and a big case because you would put multiple graphics cards in there. You needed all that space to hold that. And you needed to have a case that would have your power supply because the power supply at the time was huge. Nowadays, you can get an SFX power supply in a small form factor case that supports a triple slot width graphics card and a Mini ITX motherboard. And it's no bigger than, you know, the box you got from Amazon last week.
Yeah, that's just amazing to me, and I'm glad they're supporting it. This is an area that gets not enough attention.
Okay, moving right along, let's talk about Lexar really quick.
Oh, okay.
They had a couple of items on display, including some of the fastest DDR5 memory that I've seen at the show.
Oh, nice.
At 9,600 megatransfers per second.
Ooh, that is blazing fast.
Super, super fast, and that is off the shelf. Basically, this is a clock driver module, so it has that special chip in it that's supposed to communicate more effectively with your CPU to determine the right speed for your system.
XMS is gone, right? Now we're doing it with AI.
Pretty much.
Or something.
And it still has the same heat spreader design. They added a little bit more thickness to it, so it feels better, feels more solid. And they added a much larger light bar to the top for the Aries RGB.
Ooh, fancy.
And the one thing I wanted to call out was this SD card over here. I'm going to flip to it really quick.
Okay.
It's called the Armor. And this SD card is made out of metal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I thought it just was kind of white in the trend there.
No, it's kind of looks silver.
Armor Silver Pro, huh?
They're not terribly fast, but they are super, super strong. You're not going to be able to break these things. I guess if you break them, they're bent, and then you can't use them.
Oh, wow.
But they had one that was 1 terabyte on display, and they had another one that was 280 gigabytes. Now, if we move to MSI, we have motherboards on display.
Beautiful white there. Love the Dragon logo.
Yeah, this is the Edge MAG. This is the silver and black motherboards. And I want to say they got this color from the Apex on the ROG side of things. Yeah,
certainly very similar. Great looking board.
The one board that jumped out at me was the Z890 Godlike.
Oh, there you go.
Now, much like the previous boards that are super high-end, we have LCD screens. We have on here, it looks like two of them.
Yeah, it does.
But they were very, very shiny and reflective. It was really difficult for me to get this particular shot without having me in the shot.
Even if one of them is a screen, it looks pretty attractive with the logo on the left and the ability to see real-time CPU on the right.
Mm-hmm. Now, typically, Godlike was only reserved for the high-end Intel, but we also had a Godlike on the AMD side of things, which was pretty awesome to see. Something that we also saw at ASUS, where they're bringing Apex down to the AMD side. And then we have a series, I mean, a literal series of graphics cards. And they, much like Asus, they brought a whole new upper end to handle some of the high-end graphics cards and a couple of familiar names down below. And I guess the final item before we move on is Project Zero.
Project Zero.
You're familiar with the motherboards that have the connectors on the back.
Right, right.
MSI called that Project Zero, but we also have the Project Zero X, which is kind of taking that whole concept to the next level. Having cable connections behind your motherboard was not mind-blowing enough.
Okay.
We now have a custom case with a custom board that has the I/O connections on the back of the case.
Oh, interesting. So it's actually relocating your I/O to a completely separate place.
Yeah. And then if you go around to the front, we basically just have what looks like a graphics card that's vertical off to the side on the same plane as the motherboard. We have the motherboard here, memory off to the side, and then just an AIO where the CPU is.
Well, it's hard to say. That is incredibly clean because you had no cables, really. I mean, you can see one connector, and even that I had to look twice to see.
Yeah, it's it doesn't look like a traditional computer at all. And I think with the relocating of the cables is really just the first stage in this reimagining of what a computer really is. And the fact that builders like us will not really be able to put them together unless we want to build an MSI version or an ASUS version.
Yeah, you're going to have to stay in the same architecture to be compatible. I can see that.
Yep.
Sure looks clean, though.
Yeah, it looks amazing. And if you were to buy this off of a shelf, I would say that it's going to fly. But for someone trying to build something like this, I don't see that as being a viable solution at all.
Wow.
Now, the final vendor that I wanted to talk about, at least on the podcast, of course, I have links to my other show coverage down below, so you can check those out on Hardware Asylum. But we have Splave PC.
That's not a name I'm familiar with.
Are you familiar with Splave?
Yeah, right. This is an overclocker, isn't it?
Yeah, he's the world number one overclocker, I think, for the past 8 years or something like that.
Okay, so he's doing something new, huh?
Yeah, he is now using his name to build PCs.
Oh, good.
But not just any PC, overclocked PCs.
Oh, well, that makes sense. Nice to see a good overclocker make it good.
Well, we have several overclockers that have made good. So we had like Kingpin, for instance.
Right.
He has his own line of LN2 containers. And then he went to EVGA and was using his name to sell high-end graphics cards and video cards.
So great. Hopefully he resurfaces somewhere else with those.
Yeah. And we also have, you know, the classic Fatality.
Oh, yeah.
Who, you know, he moved around. You know, he's at Creative for a while. He's at Abit for a while. And basically, you know, he's golfing with rich people. And
he's still in the game. That's for sure.
So Splave, what he has done is been partnering with some of the brands that he uses for overclocking. So he had his own line of memory from G-Skill. So we have the Splave Edition. You can actually buy those from G-Skill directly. We also have Intermax Power Supplies have a Splave Edition as well that's specially designed for overclocking. But Splave PC is basically taking a off-the-shelf computer build and overclocking everything. So we're using Splave Edition memory. We are using an ASRock motherboard. CPU has been overclocked. And we have a GPU that's also overclocked. Now, to keep everything cool, we're using Ice Giant coolers.
Oh, wow. We haven't talked about them in a while.
Well, and it's because they've kind of slid under the radar because AIOs are really, they're super popular. That's what everybody wants because they are cheap and they work. Now, Ice Giant is using the same kind of a concept, but using phase change material instead of water.
Oh, wow.
So there's no pump.
Now that looks crazy industrial. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. So right now I'm showing you a picture of a prototype cooler that is sitting on top of a Threadripper. And when they set this machine up, Splave sat down and started overclocking. And he had, within 20 minutes, had already set world records that nobody else had been able to do because they couldn't keep the CPU cool enough. Now with this, it's basically just like my single stage phase that uses a mechanical compressor. This is using a material that once it gets to a certain temperature starts boiling And then at that point, it's sucking a lot of the heat away. And it's going up these series of tubes to go into the radiator and get cooled off by fans. And then once it's cool, it gets condensed, gets put back into this chamber here, which is a collection area. And then it will start trickling fluid back down to the CPU to start the process all over again.
Yeah, that's really awesome. The prototype is interesting. I can't wait to see what it looks like when it becomes a commercial release.
Well, they are going to be put into Splave PCs. And I didn't get a picture of that because I didn't want to tarnish the way that the build was set up. But basically what he's done is he's overclocked the entire machine. So he's using his memory, and with the Ice Giant coolers in there, he can have a much faster PC, much higher benchmark scores. So he had like one machine on the left and one machine on the right. The one on the left was just basically stock. And we ran the benchmark at the same time. That one was making a heck of a noise because of all the fans ramping up. His PC, dead quiet, and was about 20% faster.
Oh my. Well, it looks like if you're on the market for a premium PC, and you know where to look now, because that is incredible performance.
Yeah. And of course, you know, it's a niche product because it's an overclocked PC. A lot of people, well, a lot of companies in this case, have avoided doing the overclocking stuff because of the support structure that's required.
Well, I know you mentioned that was the last vendor that you wanted to talk about in any depth, but I know traditionally there are always a few interesting oddities that come out during CES. Mm-hmm. Any other highlights you want to talk about before we close it up?
Well, the theme at CES was all about AI and, you know, robots to a certain extent. There were quite a few vendors that were doing these helper robots. So think of it as a Roomba.
Sure.
But around the house. Well, around the house.
Oh, no. I get what you're going with this.
So we have lawn mowing robots. So basically, when I was sitting down talking with the vendor here, he was saying, well, with this, you can have it come out and mow your lawn every 2 days, and it will feed your yard because of the grass clippings. It requires less water, but you and I both know that we don't have every 2 days to go and spend 2 hours to mow the yard.
Yeah.
So we can just have the robot do it. And this robot will basically, you give it a fence, it figures out how to mow and it changes patterns. So one day it will go diagonal one direction, it might go diagonal the other direction. And it just, when it needs charged, it goes back and charges up and then it starts again.
Well, I know we were all kind of a little questionable when Roomba came out, but now it seems like everybody's selling one. So this can't be too far away.
Well, no. And I think there was like six vendors that had similar style robots. Some of them were cleaning pools, which is also a task that nobody likes to do, which is why you farm it out. Well, you can farm out your yard work too.
Yeah, I'd love to stop having to mow my lawn and get a robot to do it. So I see the appeal.
The other thing was in the heavy machinery automotive halls, which was kind of away from the main convention center. Well, it's still part of the convention center, but you have to walk a lot to get there.
Okay.
They had a lot of heavy machinery that was now electric.
No, not just cars anymore. Now we're doing it in tractors.
Yeah, tractors. We have backhoes. Front loaders. Last year, I was talking a lot about how Caterpillar had mining equipment, and it would run for, what was it, like 2 hours, and then it took 20 minutes to charge, and it was using two cables that were like the size of a coffee can that was water-cooled.
Oh, yeah.
It was insane. Well, they have what I would call a steam loader.
It does look
like a steam shovel, you know, back from the cartoon days, right?
Right.
But this is like basically a heavy, heavy earth mover. The concept here was that it basically was hooked into a power source all the time. So it could just run and run and run. It wouldn't have to be refueled. It wouldn't have to be, you know, stop to change shifts. That was it.
Well, yeah. And then you combine that with AI and, you know, your efficiency is, you know, as long as the machine doesn't wear out.
Yeah. Or run over somebody.
I guess. Yeah. As soon as they take over the world.
And I suppose the last thing that I was really interested in was DeepX. And this is a company, I think they're from Korea, but they were offering these little MPU boards that were M.2s that basically you could put them into servers to replace putting in a GPU for AI style acceleration. And by doing an M.2, you're just basically taking up PCI Express lanes that would normally be for hard drives or something like that. So for application servers, you don't need a lot of drives because you're using your SAN within your data center. So we allocate space for these little processing units. They're a little bit cheaper than putting in a $10,000, $12,000 GPU to run your AI software. Since they're individuals, you can dedicate them to different tasks.
Well, it looks scalable also, so you can get as few and as many as you need.
Mm-hmm. And they even had one for a Raspberry Pi, which I thought was pretty amazing. But this picture right here, this last one, is really the exemplification of what this technology can do. And we have, I think it was 256 feeds that were all being accelerated by those little MPUs that were in this server. So the server was just full of them.
Right.
And they spread that load across each one of those so that they could accelerate each one of these things and do AI analysis on these images.
I'm seeing up at the top, AI performance, 2,073.57 frames per second.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Someday we'll game at that speed or something.
And here's the one for the Raspberry Pi. It's kind of cute.
Nice.
But you can see it's just a little MPU, and then there's two pieces of memory off to the side for processing.
Ooh, fancy air cooling there, too.
Mm-hmm. But other than that, there was, you know, obviously there was more things to see. I mean, there was little robots. There was one that was sitting on a little uniball, and you could ask it questions, and it would talk to you. And you could tell that it was just querying like a llama model in the background, because the way it responded, it was responding kind of the way that you would if you were chatting with a model. But it had two Jensen boards in it, one to control the speech and another one to control movement. And there was these little RF tags on the stuff around the booth. So you'd say, hey, go pick this up. And it would run over there, pick it up, and bring it to you. It was kind of neat.
Oh my gosh, the days we'll have our own robots.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS or subscribe to us on YouTube. This has been an Engineering Production, copyright 2025. Thanks for listening.